Welcome to the inaugural edition of the Hamilton Spectator Newsroom Insider Podcast. My name is Drew Edwards, and I'm a reporter and editor here at The Spec, and I'm the first in a series of rotating hosts who will bring you this podcast, hopefully, on a weekly basis. On our first ever episode, we'll speak to Editor-in-Chief Paul Burton about this new project and what we hope readers and listeners will get from it. We'll also talk to reporter John Wells about his remarkable profile of conservative leadership candidate Lisa Raitt and her husband's battle with early-onset Alzheimer's. Finally, we'll discuss another story that appears in Saturday's paper, which details the secret contract that is allowing Mohawk College President Ron McCurley to earn a second salary from the college's foundation despite concerns from the province. Thanks for listening. Up next, Spec Editor-in-Chief Paul Burton. I'm here with Spectator Editor-in-Chief Paul Burton. Paul, this podcasting project came to you from staff, I believe, but you've been a big champion of it. Why is that?
Well, we're in an era of journalism and journalism presentation where we need to experiment and try all forms of media. This is just another in a series.
What are you hoping to hear out of these podcasts?
You know what? I actually don't know. I think I'm looking forward to seeing how we can teach people about what we do behind the scenes and how we do it, and some of the rigor that we bring to stories and some of the challenges that we have. But I think we'll need to let readers and listeners tell us what they are looking for.
If they want to get in touch with you, can they do that?
Absolutely. My number is printed in the paper, on the website, and on my column every week.
What are you writing on this week, speaking of which?
I'm writing about the role of marketing in selling a product, whether it's a newspaper or a can of Coke or a politician.
Not writing about Trump? Does the word Trump appear in your column this week?
The word Trump does not appear, although his shadow is cast on it, as always.
Is the Trump thing dying down? It's something that we were talking about in the newsroom for, well, months. But
no, I don't think the Trump thing's going to die down for a long time yet. I think people might, you know, as I wrote in a column last week, many people might get tired of it. But I don't think that people, I'm not seeing it. We're getting more letters than we've ever got. We're getting more submissions. You know, the Trump stories are still at the top of our online charts. You know, I don't know what to say.
Do you still find it interesting? Are you experiencing Trump fatigue?
I'm still fascinated. There are some of our readers who are not taking kindly to the criticism that he is under, not really as much from our readers, but just, you know, just in the general American public as much as anything.
He's posed some interesting challenges for journalists. How have you seen them take place?
Well, it's just, you know, the obvious one is that he's calling newspapers and journalists and newscasters liars. You know, we're not perfect. We make mistakes, but I mean, that's the first step in delegitimizing a democracy, if you ask me, and that may be what he's intending to do.
Can we talk about Trump in the podcast again?
We sure can.
Thanks, Paul.
See ya.
I'm here with reporter John Wells. And John, you have a story in Saturday's paper about Lisa Raitt, the MP from Milton, and her husband, Bruce Wood, who was the CEO of the Hamilton Port Authority. He's got early onset Alzheimer's. It's a very interesting story. And one of the things I was curious about was how this story came to be, because I don't think Raitt, from reading your story, is all that. I mean, she's been open about it, but she talks very candidly about it in this piece.
Yeah, it sort of came about. I wrote a week-long series on mental health late in the year, in the fall. And my editor, Cheryl Steppen, she came to me with the idea. Lisa Raitt had stood up in the House of Commons in the fall on World Alzheimer's Day, and just to give a statement about it being World Alzheimer's Day. It was supposed to be a routine kind of a thing, and she broke down and cried during her statement. And it came out later that her husband, Bruce, who had been CEO of the Hamilton Port Authority until having to step down because of his diagnosis, that she was married to Bruce. So Cheryl came to me with the idea of in the wake of my mental health series, and I wrote a chapter on dementia, that it would be a good angle for a story to write about Lisa and Bruce, Bruce being sort of the Hamilton connection, and Milton sort of being part of our general readership area, that would be a good story to do, that here's Lisa running for the leadership of the Conservative Party, her husband has early onset Alzheimer's, how are they coping, how's Bruce doing, and do a story like that.
And so how did you approach her about it?
I went through her her political, her PR guy, he read my series. I think he had read it as a matter of course, just because mental health is an issue for her, so he was impressed with the series. So you're always happy when someone you're trying to get contact with already is aware of your work and they like it. So he said he thought that was a great angle and that she might be interested in doing a story. And so we went back and forth over the course of a month. It was Christmas time, and so we didn't get it fired up again until in January. And he said that she was interested in doing a piece. I said I wasn't sure if she would be okay with me meeting Bruce. I had no idea what sort of state he was in. You get these visions in your head of, it's early onset, but what, can he talk coherently? Who knows, right? And so that started the process, and got an interview with Lisa, and things kind of went from there.
How was she to deal with?
She was very, very, very frank. The photographer, one of the photographers who did pictures on the piece, Scott Gardner, he met her separately from me for a photo shoot, and he came back to me, and I said, "What'd you think?" And he said, "Oh, she's very frank," and he used that word, and that's the word that I thought of. And speaking with her, she's very, what you see is what you get, with politicians, you don't see that all the time. I think all politicians try to be genuine, and they'd like to be described as being frank and unvarnished, but that's usually affected, I think, and that's, to a fault. I think in the past she's gotten in some trouble for just kind of shooting from the hip, but I found her very, very genuine. She's she was a good interview. She's also very protective of Bruce. I could tell when she was sort of drawing certain lines as we were talking, she was sort of just spilling her guts about everything, and the story I think reflects that to some extent. But with Bruce, she was being protective of him.
When you talked to him, how was that? There were some lines drawn around what you could do there, mm-hmm. but what was that experience like?
That was very interesting. I pushed fairly hard for me to meet with Bruce. I mean, Lisa sort of drew the line. Bruce went to an interview. That wasn't on the table, kind of thing. And her PR guy told me that, and I kind of kept pushing back and saying, I think he's part of the story, and part of the issue with Alzheimer's and dementia is stigma. And if he's sort of mystified as this figure in the background, people wonder, like I wondered, well, geez, can he talk? I mean, what's he? And that it would help the story and help our perception of Bruce if I got to meet him at least. So basically the line was drawn that Lisa said, okay, but you know what, he's very, he doesn't want the reporter's pad, he doesn't want the tape recorder. And I said, well, can I just meet him? It won't be an on-the-record interview, but I can just meet him, get a sense of him. She said, and she's okay with that. So it's a difficult kind of thing, because I'm going in there knowing I can't really sort of quote him, but at the same time I want to use the visit in my story and be fair to him and be fair to her. So I went to their home in North Milton and met Bruce, and he was just a regular guy, a warm kind of guy. And he showed me his, Lisa said, oh, he'll show you his workshop and all the stuff he's got going on and so on. And at first I wasn't even sure if he knew I was doing a story, but then I came to appreciate he knew I was doing a story, but there was just no interview. So I observed the stuff in his garage and his workshop and sort of made mental notes of how he was talking, what he was like. And I got back in my car after having spent maybe half an hour with him at home and just sort of dictated thoughts to myself. I do this a lot to get my first impression so I don't forget what I was thinking. And in the end of the story, I didn't quote anything he said directly. There's no quotation marks around what he said, but I paraphrased what he talked to me about in general, how he talked about growing up in Montreal and his projects around the house and his trip with the boys to Florida for golf. And we had this moment in the kitchen of the house. I was talking with Bruce, and I said, so you had a golf trip with your buddies? He's like, oh yeah, that was great time. I said, oh yeah. And I find myself asking questions, kind of testing him in a way, I suppose, but also just having conversation at the same time to see what his cognitive skills are like. And I just said, oh, so what was it like down there? He goes, oh, it was nice. I said, oh, was that hot? And he's like, oh, in the 70s, it was nice weather. I'm like, oh yeah. I said, so where in Florida did you go? This was 2 weeks ago, this trip you took. I said, where in Florida did you go? And he said, I have no idea. And I just kind of paused. And I thought, oh, okay, that must be, you know, to myself, that's the Alzheimer's. And I thought, then again, Florida, tons of places in Florida. You know, someone else might say, yeah, I don't know, somewhere in the Keys. Yeah, somewhere in the Keys, somewhere in the Atlantic side, somewhere in the Gulf side. So I thought later, who knows if that's indicative of something. It could be. Because long-term memory seemed really good. So at the end of the story, that's exactly how I wrote it. I didn't quote him on that, but I said kind of what he said after this guest, this visitor, as I referred to in the story, which is me, was talking to him. So in the end, I felt, you know, the story, you know, I don't know how they'll react to the story. I think it's a fair representation of how I found him. And who knows? I mean, if he had been in a really bad state and it had been a very sad kind of meeting and a very difficult for me to talk to him, I suppose I would have had to make some different decisions or written it differently. But as it was, I wanted to convey what I saw, which was this guy who seems like there's nothing wrong with him, but she did tell me about the frustrations he's had with his short-term memory and finding the correct word to say and that sort of thing. And so I convey that in the story too.
She's running for the leadership of the Conservative Party. So right. I think there's always a political angle to any interaction you have with a politician because they are mm-hmm. politicians. Yeah. Did you have to take that into consideration in your reporting and doing this story? Were you cognizant of the fact that she was running for the leadership and that had to play a role in mm-hmm. in how you portrayed this story?
Yeah, it was on my mind all the time. You know, I opened early in the story. I have her at a breakfast meeting in Hamilton, giving a speech to a local organization, and it's a stump speech. I mean, she's running for the leadership, and so I make reference to her being there. I made a conscious point in the story not to have her views on any policies at all. You don't even learn why she's running. You know, I mean, she talked about, you know, her vision for the party and how the party needs her, the country needs her, and all that, you know, the standard stuff. And some of it quite good, and some of it boilerplate, whatever. But I made a conscious effort not to include that in the story. Because the story, and I talked to Cheryl, my editor, about this. The story was about Lisa and Bruce. It's a sort of a human story. But, you know, as we were talking about before, I mean, there's always something political there. I mean, she's running. I mentioned the fact that she's running. It's a story about her. I've often thought that profiles, by their very nature, no matter how balanced they are or even how negative they might be in tone, are sympathetic to the subject because they're the subject of the story. You know, I've written about killers and they become the subject of the story, and so they're sympathetic in a certain way because it's about them. And so I was very conscious of that, and you know, and all through our interviews she'd be talking about various things and go off a tangent. Well, you know, we talk about her upbringing in Cape Breton, very poor and you know, difficult family situation, so on. She talked about that, she'd say, you know, and not to cast aspersions on Mr. Trudeau or Mr. Morneau.
Right. And she would talk about, and then she would.
And then she would, as her aside, and I didn't include the aside. I just talked right. about her life growing up. People really following us can draw their own conclusions about stuff like that. Or, you know, part of me is, I try not to read the online comments if I can. Part of me is sort of dreading that sort of blowback here. The people go, oh, you know, you didn't mention the scandal from this year or that year involving her, or she did this. And on the other hand, you know, people who love her might say, well, you know, how come you didn't mention the fact that she was the cabinet minister of this portfolio and you know, did this or that policy? And I just generalized and said she was a cabinet minister for three different portfolios and didn't say which ones. So I'll probably get from both sides of that, perhaps, or who knows. But it's not a political story, although people will point out the fact that she is running. She's in the middle of this race, and I guess they'll draw their own conclusions on that.
People get whatever they need out of a story based on their own experiences, based on what their lives are like. As reporters, as writers, we're trying to get something out of the story too, or at least that's how I feel about it, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Did you get something out of doing this?
I always, like you, I always get a lot out of it. I mean, I often think of it as being a gift, doing stories where we get to meet interesting people. Even if their experiences are nothing like we've had, and I think you're always bringing something yourself to the story when you're writing it. It's always about what you're writing about, but it's also about you in some way,
right.
in a real subtle way. I don't know. I think you know, I empathize with Lisa Raitt's thoughts on Alzheimer's. You know, she talked about it. I didn't quote her this at length. Why I said how she had long feared the notion of her brain deteriorating. And that was one thing that always frightened her. And so as she talked about things like that, I found myself thinking, yeah, well, yeah, you know, it's true. You find yourself,
what we all feel.
Yeah, and so kind of making me a little bit scared and thinking about that and meeting Bruce and saying he's doing fine, but he's on this road from which there's no return. I use that phrase in the story. So it's kind of like I'm talking about him and those sort of, she says he's not afraid, he's just frustrated about day-to-day stuff. But as I'm writing about their road ahead, I'm thinking about my road ahead, because how can you not?
Right.
And the relationship with your spouse, and you know, the two of them got married after his diagnosis. When I first heard that they were married and he had this diagnosis very recently, sort of the leadership, I sort of got the order wrong in my head. I kind of thought, oh, maybe they got married and then she found out about the diagnosis. And can you imagine marrying someone and then finding out that this person is going to slowly change into a person that they weren't? And, you know, being sort of maybe bloody-minded about it, would you still go ahead with getting married? And then I found out, in fact, they got married before that. I thought, well, that's quite interesting. And what would I have done? And in a marriage, people are changing all the time through your relationship. And so there's a lot wrapped up in that, a lot of meaning. And which maybe some of that comes out subtly in the story. I always try to, if I can, underwrite stuff and let people kind of tease things out of a story. I don't like to hit people over the head with meaning or anything like that. But those are layers that probably may not even show up in the story. But those are some of the things that I was thinking about writing in.
I appreciate you doing this.
Thanks, Drew.
Thanks, John. I'm here with Spectator reporter Joanna Frkatich. Joanna, you've got an excellent story in Saturday's paper that has the word secret in the headline. Anytime the word secret is in a headline, I'm reading that story. Can you tell us about it?
Well, the story is about Mohawk College president Ron McCurley. He is paid a salary for his job as president of Mohawk College, but it turns out that he also has a contract and is paid a salary as the head of the foundation. And that contract, salary, and expenses are kept secret from the public. So there is no way for you to go and find out what the contract has in it or how much the salary is or what expenses he claims.
How do you get a story like this?
Well, this story came about because I wrote a story in January about changes to executive compensation. The province is taking a freeze off executive salaries for the first time in quite a few years. And as part of that, they asked colleges and hospitals and universities and other public sector employers to come up with a range, a salary range that includes a cap. And so Mohawk College was one of the first to go through this process, and they proposed a cap of $400,000 for Ron McCurley's salary, which means that he could have got a raise of more than 50%. So that was a story that grabbed a lot of attention, and it was through doing this story that we discovered that he also has a salary with the foundation.
Why would this be a concern to readers in general, in your mind?
Well, the big concern is that the province has very set rules for executive compensation. So those rules say that the salaries must be disclosed every year on the Sunshine List if they're over $100,000. It sets out things that are not allowed to be in the contract, such as memberships to certain clubs or season tickets, things like that. It says that expenses for the leadership of the organizations have to be put on their websites or made in a way that the public can look at them. Same with the contracts. So the concern with this is that it allows Ron McCurley to be receiving things that, first of all, the public doesn't see, and also that some of those things that aren't allowed, through the foundation, could provide to him without anybody knowing. It sort of allows them to get around the rules. Now, we don't know if they're actually doing that. We don't know if there's anything in that contract that is outside of the act, but that's the problem.
That's the point, isn't it?
Yeah,
if you can't see the contract,
yes,
you can't determine whether or not they're circumventing the rules.
Exactly. And you don't know if what expenses he is claiming through the foundation. And you can't see if his salary went up at the same time that the salaries were supposed to be frozen for executives. Like, the foundation just works outside of provincial rules. So it means that for that contract, they don't have to follow any of the rules that the province set out for executive compensation. So that's the big concern.
How long have you been working on this?
I have been working on this story for about a month. It's been a tough one to get.
Yeah. exciting though, or just stressful, or how do you feel about it?
Well, I think stories like this are really important. They're what newspapers and journalists do best. I mean, this is our role, is to be the watchdog. That's sort of the best part of our job and what's so important for the community. And, you know, some of the real value that journalism has for a community. So for me, it's just good to take this and bring it to light and sort of bring that salary to light. We were able to get the salary from Mohawk College, so I'm able to tell people what that salary is. And hopefully maybe this pressure will in the future have other things like his contract or expenses. Maybe those things will be brought to light too, just from the pressure that's being put on this. The deputy premier is calling on Mohawk College to release all of this information.
And that's interesting, right? And that's a direct result of your story, right? And the fact that you started to ask these questions and now the province is getting involved, right?
Yes, the province was very strong in saying that her words were that she wanted, you know, the leaders to demonstrate integrity and to be transparent and accountable.
Interesting. Thanks very much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.